Okay, so welcome everyone to this meditation class. So I'll, as usual, start off by saying a few things about meditation-related theme. And last night I was talking about pleasure, and I was talking about sensual pleasure and spiritual pleasures. And I thought maybe I could talk about this here in the meditation class as well. Because one of the problems in life is one of the problems in meditation. Of course, we have the five hindrances, and there is a specific sequence to those five hindrances. The first hindrance is the hindrance of desire for sensual pleasures. And the reason why it is first is, of course, because it is the most problematic one. It is the one that causes the most problems. It is the one that, in a sense, gives rise to very much the rest of the hindrances. So if you can deal a little bit with the first hindrance, it means that all five are also dealt with at the same time. So how can we deal with this? And this is one of the themes I was talking about yesterday. Sometimes it's good to reflect a little bit about the danger in these things. And when you think about the danger, then you let go a little bit. When you let go a little bit, it means the desire diminishes, the hindrances start to disappear. So what is a good way of thinking about these hindrances? Last night I was talking about three things. And the first thing is that to remind yourself how little control you have over these things. What we know is that we have some control over our own inner world, over our intentions, over our actions, over our conduct. But the external world is very hard to control. Suddenly the economy goes down, the economy goes up. Suddenly you get fired from your job. Suddenly your partner leaves you or dies. Suddenly your house gets burgled. You just don't know what's going to happen next. There's always a large degree of uncertainty in the sensual world. And because of that uncertainty, if you just remember that a little bit, that's enough to give you a little bit of distance, a little bit of saying, well, maybe I should actually search for my meditation, search for my happiness somewhere else. And then if you do that, then particularly just before a meditation, that may give you that incentive to go a little bit deeper in that meditation session. That's the first one. Remember the uncertainty. Remember there's one nice simile in the suttas where the Buddha talks about sensual pleasures is like climbing up a fruit tree. Now the fruits in that fruit tree, these are like the pleasures that you're climbing up to get for yourself. And while you're sitting in the top of that fruit tree, somebody else comes along and starts cutting down the tree at the root. Now if you don't come down from those sensual pleasures very fast, you're going to injure yourself really badly, right? Because the tree is going to fall down. And this is like the uncertainty of sensual pleasures. Before you know it, the whole thing comes tumbling down and you hurt yourself badly because they change, something happened. This is the first thing. The second thing with sensual pleasures, or another thing at least, is that they're always tied up with craving. In other words, sensuality, the external world, we always crave for these things. And craving, by its very definition, is a sense of lack, right? You want something more, you're lacking something, you're not complete. And that sense of lack, as long as you are craving, that sense of lack will always be there. And that sense of lack is not going to be fulfilled by craving. Even if you get the object of craving, it's not going to fulfill that lack because there is a psychologically something missing inside. So the way to fill that lack, the way to end that craving is again to seek happiness somewhere else, a more profound sense of happiness, a happiness that is still, a happiness that is non-sensual, but spiritual, and that comes through meditation practice. So that sense of lack can only be overcome by spiritual practice or by developing the mind, not by searching for more things in the world of the five senses. That's the second reason why it's good to put aside the sensual realm for this time being. It's not really fulfilling. It never really fulfills you. There's always that hole there. That's the very definition of craving, is that something is missing. And the last thing is simply that there is a sense of impurity with craving, with desire in the sensual world. It doesn't have that purity which the pure spiritual practice has. And part of that impurity is that as long as there's craving there, there's also self-interest. There's a vested interest. And as long as there is a vested interest, you cannot give, you cannot be 100% loving or compassionate, because you want something out of that relationship. You want something out of that object that you are searching for. And because of that, there is a degree of impurity there. It's not pure compassion, pure kindness. There is a degree of defilement involved. And that impurity can be felt, right? The best things to the best way of seeing these things, the craving, the impurity, the impermanence, is to feel them for yourself. And when you feel them for yourself, you can see their limitations very clearly. So reflect a little bit like that on sensual pleasures. And when you reflect like that, it distances you a little bit. It kind of the grip on your mind becomes a little bit less, because you understand their limitations and you understand the problems that might arise because of these things. Okay, so let us now do a little bit of meditation together. Okay, so just sit comfortably as usual. Make sure you're nice and comfortable. The initial purpose of meditation is just to allow the body to disappear, to fade away. And the only way the body will fade away is if it's comfortable. So feel your body. Close your eyes. Feel your body. Make any adjustments you have to make. And just learn to relax, to be completely at ease where you're sitting here. And just spend the first few minutes of the meditation just to make sure that you are nice and relaxed, that you have no tensions. If you find any tensions in the body, take a few deep breaths and just allow that tension to dissipate. And if there is any part of the body that doesn't relax properly or is painful in any way, then send a few thoughts of kindness to that part of the body. May you be well, may you be happy. Thank you for looking after me for all these years. Now I will return that kindness. May you be well, may you be happy. And then as your body relaxes completely, the way that you know that it's working is because the body fades into the background. The body starts to disappear. And that is the good sign. That is the right way. And then when the body achieves a certain state of tranquility, it starts to fade away. The next thing is to allow the mind to become peaceful too. And this is always achieved by just sitting there and just watching, allowing things to be. And the more you're able to just allow things to be, the more peaceful they tend to become. So just watch, just be aware and allow things to calm down all by themselves. And as you calm down in your meditation, just learn to appreciate the freedom from burdens, from all the things in the world. All you have to do now is sit here, doing absolutely nothing. There's no work, there's no house, there's no family, there's nothing except sitting still. What a wonderful thing that is, to be able to be peaceful, having no burdens whatsoever. And as you calm down, as you find that joy and happiness in just sitting here doing absolutely nothing, then you may find that the breath appears in your mind. And when the breath appears in the mind, all you have to do is rest your attention on that breath. not using any force, not using any willpower, but simply resting the attention on the breath. If the breath disappears, allow it to disappear and just wait. And when the breath comes back again, then and only then do you rest your attention on the breath once more. No willpower, no force. Allow it to be completely natural. In that way, the meditation becomes beautiful and pleasant, and then you will enjoy what you're doing. Okay, are there any questions or comments or anything like that? Everybody's happy? Yes, okay. Yes, Chris.
Just asking you about the Edipadas in meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the first one is the mustering using willpower to gather a sense of intention about what you're on about in meditation. And the second one is using willpower to gather a sense of your energies. What's the third one? The fourth one is investigation reality. What's the third one? And how do these things apply in meditation?
Okay. Well, the first one is basically chanda samadhi. It's called chanda means desire, basically. So I suppose it is having a kind of wholesome desire that drives in the right direction. You know, anything you do in life, there has to be a desire that underlies what you're doing. This is the wholesome desire that drives in the right direction. Based on that desire, that desire has to abate at a certain point, but at least it's taking you towards samadhi initially. The second one is investigation. And that is a little bit like we were talking about before, about investigating some area of Dhamma which takes away the defilements, right? Like investigating sensuality, for example, and understanding it. And through that investigation, through that understanding, the defilements abate, the defilements calm down, and then through that your mind goes towards samadhi. So any kind of investigation which makes the mind more wholesome takes it towards samadhi again. That's the second one, vimamsa samadhi. How does it go again? Vimamsa samadhi, padana sankara samanagara, something like that. So that's using the vimamsa. The third one is just using the mind, chitta. And that is a bit unclear, but chitta normally means samadhi itself. It's usually kind of a synonym for samadhi itself. So this might just be the case that you have a mind that is very already kind of moving that direction, and just apply that mind to continue that practice, so to speak. But it's not entirely clear. I must admit, I find it a bit difficult myself to know what it actually refers to. I got the sequence the wrong way around. The second one should be energy. The last one is the mangsa. So the energy is the middle one, and that is the natural energy you have in the mind when you're mindful and when you etc.
Well, it makes sense that, you can have an intention to either inside meditation, move to a certain place or in the world to achieve a certain goal, but if you don't have energy, that's not going to happen. The third one, is it fair to say that the third one is actually the style and the way that you pay attention? The way that you pay attention, your Vipassana style, your absorption style in meditation, and know how all that works, and be familiar with it, use your willpower to direct it in whatever way you want to.
I would say that the way you pay attention is more to do with the last one, vimamsa, which is investigation. So you attend in the right place in the right way. I think the third one is basically the mind that is already inclining towards samadhi, because the word citta is often used synonymously with samadhi in the suttas, as can dhamma can be as well. But I think it's more, I don't know, I mean, these things are hard to pin down because they are explained very well actually in the suttas themselves. The whole Idipada formula isn't explained that in such great detail. I would think it is a mind that already is inclining towards samadhi, and you just use that mind to take it deeper, essentially. That's what I would think.
I remember Dhammajiva said in the retreat last year, he said that when one develops concentration or develops focus, one has to have a beginning focus a batch of skills to start things off, a batch of skills to keep on keeping on, that's consistency and not fall by the wayside, and then a mental focus ability to achieve whatever it is you want to achieve. So he talks about sort of three phases of the way that you when you're meditating, you need all three qualities.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just not going to, you're not going to pull it off.
Right. I think it's probably all three qualities, but it's also gradual. It's also a sequence. I mean, everything in the suttas is sequential. So there's also a sequential thing here. That's why chanda comes first, because chanda is the most basic one. It's the desire that drives you, right? And then from that chanda, then the energy. Because the energy is not the, it's not actually the effort you're using. It's the natural energy of the mind that arises as a consequence of pure conduct, of the meditation deepening. It's energy you can feel sometimes in meditation when the mind becomes kind of more... energy which is independent of effort, basically. And then that then moves on to, that's when the, I think, when that energy arises, that's when mindfulness usually becomes strong. And that's when actually the focus on the object becomes pretty much automatic. And that's what I think citta means here. The automatic focus on the object. Because the mind is kind of no longer dependent on you actually doing very much. That was a little bit of intention there, perhaps, but it's pretty automatic. It's similar to the sequence we have in the Bhojangas, the awakening factors, right? Similar kind of sequence. Little bit of desire, then the energy arises, then the attention is automatic, and then you use that automatic intention to abandon the last vestiges of the hindrances, and that is equivalent to the second factor of the Bhojangas, which is the investigation of dhammas, and that is then what takes you to full samadhi. That's how I would understand it. I mean, all of these sequences are essentially parallel. You know, you look at the five indriyas, the bhojangas, the idipadas, they're all parallel. So you should be able to recognize that sequence, that same sequence within all of these sets of enlightenment factors, basically.
Well, there must be, the Buddha thought fairly highly of it, because he included it in one of the 37 subjects for contemplation.
Sorry?
The Buddha obviously thought very highly of the four roads, the four Idipadas, because he included in the 37...
Bodhipakadamma, the wings to awakening,
But, you know, one of the things you said in the retreat, you said this last year, this energy, because you just said then that the energy is independent of willpower. I mean, one of the things you were saying last year, and it certainly knocked my socks off when you said it, is that energy doesn't come from willpower, it comes from sila.
You know, it comes from what?
Energy comes from sila.
Right.
The energy
to
penetrate deeply in meditation, it comes from sila. It doesn't come from grunting on the meditation cushion.
Precisely, That's the idea. That's the real energy here. The energy that we want to develop is always the energy which is natural, right? Where the mind is bright, the mind is radiant, the energy which is there automatically by itself. The energy that you have to, when you have to use force, that is, I mean, sometimes you have to use a little bit of force, a little bit of intention, but the ideal energy is the natural energy of the mind which happens, as you say, when sila arises. And this is the energy you see here, because that is when meditation really starts to happen. When you have natural energy, it's easy to focus, easy to be mindful. The process starts to take on a course of its own, so to speak.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, there's one more. Anybody else have anything they want to ask about? Everybody quite happy? Yeah? Okay. So one question from Sri Lanka, Indira in Sri Lanka. Please share some other ways on how to make our mind quiet while we meditate. Okay, so this is, of course, a very common problem in meditation. Even though you sit down, you relax, you take it easy, the mind is often still busy, right? The mind is still wandering around. And the reason why that is happening is basically because you're not 100% content with what you're doing here. When the mind isn't content, then it tends to wander. That's the nature of the mind. So to make the mind more content, you have to focus on something beautiful in the mind, something which makes the mind happy, makes the mind pleased, makes the mind want to be in the present moment. When you focus on something beautiful, then the mind calms down. And this is why we have this tremendous emphasis on sila, on conduct, and also on generosity, and all these other things in Buddhism. Because these things, when you reflect on them afterwards, sometimes you don't really need to reflect that much. They just come to you when you become peaceful. The reason we emphasize these things so much is because they are the basis and the grounds for happiness in meditation. And when you have a happiness, the mind wants to be in the moment, because the moment is happy, right? The moment is beautiful. So in the long run, that's really the way to make the mind peaceful, is to focus on sila. And remember that when we talk about sila, we also mean the mental sila, right? It's about how you think about other people, how you think about the world, and you have a positive attitude towards these things. Then the mind does become peaceful. And this is really the only way. It is very fascinating how important virtue is on the Buddhist path. When the Buddha explains the process of meditation, he always starts off with sila. Sila is always the foundation factor. And when that foundation factor is strong enough, then the rest happens by itself. From sila comes pamoja, comes gladness. Of course, not just any sila, but real sila, right? Body, speech and mind, both acting positively and avoiding the negative actions. When all of that comes together, then that mind is naturally glad. And that is when mindfulness happens, because you are happy. The mind doesn't want to go anywhere else. What's the point of thinking about the future or the past if the present is beautiful? There's no point. You're happy where you are. You feel fulfilled right here and now. The reason you think about the future and the past is because you don't feel fulfilled. You don't feel present moment isn't complete, right? Something is lacking. And so this is really the only way in the long run how to do it. In the short run, you just have to try to think of something beautiful. Do a bit of metta practice. Do something which inspires you. Do a reflection on the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Read a little bit in the sutta which inspires you, something you find beautiful. Listen to a guided metta meditation by an inspiring teacher. It often works, because guided meditation is often, often be powerful, because it kind of infuses you with that feeling of meditation when you're there. So do anything which inspires you, anything which makes you feel happy, that then draws you into the present moment, and then the thinking process starts to calm down because of that. Inspiration and happiness are so important on this path, basically. Okay, Indira, good luck with your meditation. Okay, let's pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.